This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Listen to verse 255 of chapter Baqarah, recited by Mr. Ali Asghar Burumand.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahu la ilaha illa لا تأخذه سنة ولا نوم له ما في السماوات وما في الأرض من ذا الذي عنده إلا بإذنه لا تأخذه سنة ولا نوم له ما في السماء من ذا الذي يشفع عنده إلا بإذنه يعلم ما بين أيديهم وما ولا يحيطون بشيء من علمه إلا بما شاء وسع كرسيه السماوات والأرض ولا صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Allah is He, besides whom there is no God, the ever-living, the self-subsisting, by whom all subsist. Slumber does not overtake Him, nor sleep. Whatever is in the heavens and whatever is in the earth is His. Who is He that can intercede with Him but by His permission? He knows what is before them and what is behind them, and they cannot comprehend anything out of His knowledge except what He pleases. His knowledge extends over the heavens and the earth, and the preservation of them both tires Him not. and He is the Most High, the Great.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
This hour's top story, Syria rejects a report on the use of chlorine bomb by its army, saying the U.S. and its allies use the global chemical weapons watchdog as a political tool. Iran's nuclear negotiator in Vienna slams Europeans for failing to condemn the act of sabotage at Natanz enrichment facility and imposing new sanctions on Tehran. Also in the headlines, the U.S. city of Chicago is bracing for unrest after the release of a video showing the police fatal shooting of a 13-year-old Latino boy. Welcome to the program. Syria has strongly condemned a recent report by the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons that blamed Damascus for a 2018 attack in Idlib province. Foreign Minister Faisal Mabbod said that the report contains false conclusions that represent another scandal for the global chemical weapons watchdog. He said the U.S. and its allies, which back terrorist groups in Syria, are using the watchdog and Syria's chemical file as a political tool. On Monday, the OPCW said the Syrian army had dropped chlorine bomb on a residential area in Idlib in 2018. At that time, Syria denied any involvement. The country had destroyed its chemical weapons stockpile long before the attack. The UN says the world's largest humanitarian crisis in Yemen is getting even worse, with the pandemic roaring back in recent weeks. UN Humanitarian Chief Mark Lowcock said cases are surging in Yemen, which already faces a large-scale famine. He said health facilities and hospitals have to turn people away because they lack resources. Lowcock was addressing a UN Security Council meeting. He said tens of thousands of Yemenis are already starving to death, with another 5 million just a step behind. Lowcock called for urgent action to stop the unfolding catastrophe. Yemen has been devastated by war waged by its northern neighbor Saudi Arabia 6 years ago. The Yemeni military says it has conducted new attacks against positions inside Saudi Arabia. It says missiles and drones hit a facility belonging to Saudi oil giant Aramco. Sensitive targets were also hit in the kingdom's southwestern Jizan region. Abdul Latif al-Washali is in Sana'a.
The Yemeni army said it has launched fresh attacks on Saudi Arabia using 11 missiles and drones against a facility belonging to Saudi Arabia's Aramco oil giant and other sensitive targets in Jizan. It was announced in a tweet by the spokesman for the Yemeni Armed Forces, Brigadier General Yahya Saria. Saria said Force Samad 3 and Qasif K2 drones were also used in the attacks.
This is a message to Saudi Arabia that it must stop its war and lift its blockade on the Yemeni people. The Saudis must allow the fuel ships to enter Yemen, otherwise the next attacks will be worse for them. We targeted Aramco, which is the backbone of the Saudi Arabia and the global economy. We'll continue our attacks and target vital installations.
The spokesman of the Yemeni army said the attack came in retaliation for the latest Saudi crime against civilians in Sada in northern Yemen that killed two children and wounded four others. others, including a woman, said he vowed wider and larger attacks until the war is stopped.
Fuel is one of the main sources of life in the world, and today there is a blockade on Yemen, and oil ships are being prevented from entering the country. Many health centers in Yemen have stopped providing services due to lack of fuel, so the battle is economic, and we will continue targeting Aramco until it stops working. It is our right to fight back.
Yemen's armed forces on Monday launched an attack against Aramco's refineries in Jeddah and Dubai with 10 drones of Samad 3 type and caused a heavy blow to the Saudi economy. The Saudi war has brought about the world's worst humanitarian crisis in Yemen, according to the United Nations.
Yemenis say the army has the right to target Saudi facilities to respond to the crimes committed against Yemeni civilians. They have also made it clear that their attacks against Riyadh will persist until the war is stopped. Abdul Latif Al Washali, Sana'a.
The signatories of the Iran nuclear deal and another joint commission meeting in Vienna, with talks expected to continue via technical and legal teams. Iran's lead negotiator, Abbas Araghchi, says Tehran is not looking for protracted talks and will end negotiations if no progress is made. Homa Lesky reports.
Another joint commission session among the remaining signatories of the nuclear deal ends in Vienna. Political directors decide to mandate two working groups to restart technical discussions and come up with concrete lists of sanctions that need to be lifted by the US and nuclear measures that need to be taken by Iran in order for both sides to come back to full compliance with the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA. Participants agreed that preparing the list of US sanctions is of particular importance, since nothing can move forward without it.
The current sticking point, number one sticking point, is U.S. to lift its sanctions, all its sanctions, not just the primary sanction against Iran, but also lift all its sanctions of long-term jurisdiction in nature, involving the third-party entities and the individuals.
Iran's lead negotiator, Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, called the meeting serious and challenging, coming after an attack on Iran's Natanz enrichment facility and Tehran's decision to increase the level of enrichment from 20 to 60%.
We expressed our strong position and our expectation that these acts of sabotage and terror should have been condemned by European countries and E3.
Iran says it will only come back to full compliance after the U.S. lifts all sanctions and the Islamic Republic carries out a verification process, a demand that, according to media reports up until now, has met U.S. resistance.
We negotiate behind the tables, not through media. The positions taken in the media is something. The real positions on the table is something else.
For the time being, political directors will monitor technical discussions and decide whether the talks need to be extended day by day or whether the sides need to stop talking and go back home. Homa Lizgi, Vienna.
Well, before I go on, let's just piece up breaking news. It says that it's according to U.S. police, first of all, that at least 8 people have been killed in an Indianapolis shooting. Again, to reiterate, 8 people have been killed in an Indianapolis shooting. I wonder if this piece of news was about this. I'm just going to move on and read this one for you. But no, this is actually a separate piece of development that has happened in the U.S. And that comes, of course, on the heels of another shooting that happened just a few days ago, as a result of which, actually, that one, as claimed by the person perpetrated it, who happened to be a police officer, a shooting that went sideways, in which a driver was killed who happened to be a black person. We do not know who these 8 people are, but there's been a shooting. That's all we can tell you for the moment. There's been a shooting in Indianapolis in which 8 people have been killed. We're trying to give you more details as far as that story is concerned. Let's move on to Another story now. Chicago authorities have released a police body camera video that captured the deadly U.S. police shooting of a 13-year-old Hispanic boy last month. Chicago's Civilian Office of Police Accountability also released other materials related to the killing. They include more body cam videos from involved and responding police officers, as well as third-party videos, I should say. Adam Toledo was shot in the chest by an unidentified police officer in Chicago on March 29th. Police said Toledo was armed with a handgun. That has been rejected by a lawyer for the victim's family.
Adam, during his last second of life, did not have a gun in his hand. The officer screamed at him, "Show me your hands." Adam complied, turned around. His hands were empty when he was shot in the chest at the hands of the officer.
The Chicago mayor has also said she watched the videos, but no evidence that Toledo shot at officers. Officials in Chicago are now preparing for civil unrest following the release of the footage. Tensions have already run high in many U.S. cities over racism and police brutality. Tensions began to rise following police's killing of African-American George Floyd last year. A series of recent fatal shootings have further escalated anti-racism sentiments. Political analyst Gloria Lariva says U.S. police's killing of minorities has become an epidemic and the situation is out of control.
I think that what we're seeing with the death of Dante Wright in Minneapolis and all the many deaths that have taken place in the last year, the last 5 years, 10 years, roughly 1,000 every year of police killings of black and brown men, mostly men, is an epidemic. And it's become absolutely, it's intolerable that you see these families suffer the rest of their lives because they're losing their children. And this video in Chicago was delayed because the police and the city knew the reaction that it would get. It reminds us of a killing of a 12-year-old boy here in Northern California, of Tamir Rice in Cleveland, of these children who the police immediately gunned down. And the police are out of control. And the U.S. needs to be punished. The U.S. government, with the protection of the police, with the training of the police, and historically how the U.S. developed as a slave society, and after slavery was over, at the end of the Civil War, these police forces began to form from north to south, in which black people in particular would be rounded up, imprisoned in the new sort of slave labor force.
Let's just move on. The family of black man Dante Wright, shot dead recently, that is, by a white police officer in the U.S., has called for justice in the case. They have rejected the officer's claim that she mistook her gun for a taser, causing the death.
You see a gun, a taser. So it's very difficult for this family to accept that this is an accident when you have a veteran who's been on the police force for 26 years.
Wright's family was reacting to manslaughter charges filed against the former Minnesota police officer. Kim Potter shot dead Dante Wright during a traffic stop in Brooklyn Center at the weekend. Potter resigned after the killing and made her first court appearance on Thursday. She faces a maximum of 10 years in jail if convicted. The shooting brought people to the streets of Brooklyn Center for the fifth straight night Thursday. Protests have also taken place in Minneapolis. The French Parliament has passed a security bill that increases police powers and criminalizes publishing images of on-duty police officers. The bill was approved by the majority of votes at the National Assembly. The French Senate had already adopted the bill. Lawmakers redrafted the most controversial article of the text that now curbs identification of police officers with the obvious intent to harm them. Punishment includes up to 5 years in jail and a nearly $90,000 fine. However, opponents say the new draft is still vague and subject to interpretation by police officers. That's why civil rights activists say it threatens efforts to denounce police abuse. Protests against the bill have been held regularly in France for months now. Official data show China's gross domestic product jumped more than 18% in the first quarter from a year earlier. The growth is a sharp turnaround from the historic economic contraction caused by the coronavirus pandemic. The increase is also the strongest China has seen in the past three decades. It was propelled by stronger demand at home and abroad, as well as continued government support for smaller firms. Data also show China's industrial output as well as retail sales jumped in March. The country's economy was the only major one to grow at all in 2020. China's acted successfully to bring under control its COVID-19 outbreak thanks to strict restrictions. Now, a congressional hearing on the coronavirus pandemic has become heated, with a Republican representative challenging infectious disease chief Anthony Fauci. The hearing was held in the House of Representatives Thursday. Congressman Jim Jordan asked Fauci for a timeline on an end to COVID restrictions. Jordan posed it as a question as to when Americans will regain their freedom and liberties. Fauci, in response, said he doesn't see the issue as a liberty thing, but a public health issue. He then tried to elaborate on gradual reduction of infections after vaccination. Jordan, however, interrupted Fauci and continued questioning him after his time was over. That was when Democratic Representative Maxine Waters interjected, asking Jordan to stop.
What you're going to see as more and more people get vaccinated, and we get over 3 million people a day, you're going to see the level of infection come down and down, and gradually there will be more flexibility for doing the things that you're talking
Where
about.
Where does it get to? When it comes down, what number do we get our liberties back?
Mr. Chairman, I don't want you to answer my question. The American people want Dr. Fauci to answer the question. What does it have to be?
Expire, sir. If you need to respect the chair and shut your mouth.
As Jordan continued his attacks on Fauci, he accused the congressman of ranting. The hearing was to examine President Joe Biden administration's response to the COVID outbreak in the U.S. The pandemic and its handling has turned into a divisive issue there, as some politicians are opposed to strict curbs to contain the disease. The virus has so far infected more than 31.5 million in the U.S. Of them, over 565,000 have died. Brazil has recorded over 73,000 new COVID-19 infections as the country's hospitals struggle to cope with the worst phase of the outbreak. The Brazilian Health Ministry also registered over 3,500 daily coronavirus deaths. South American country has confirmed over 13.7 million cases so far and more than 365,000 deaths from the pandemic. Brazil's hospitals, mind you, running out of medical or medicine needed to sedate COVID-19 patients and are also struggling to get enough oxygen. ICU beds are also at or near capacity across the country. Mexico is another badly hit Latin American nation. It reported over 4,000 new cases and 401 more fatalities on Thursday. That brings the country's total closer to 2.3 million infections and over 211,000 deaths. Moving on, India has reported a record daily jump of over 217,000 COVID cases in the past 24 hours. That was the eighth record daily increase in the last 9 days. India's total infections are now above 14.3 million, second only to the U.S. The commercial hub, Mumbai, accounts for almost a quarter of India's total cases. Health officials say hospitals in Mumbai and several other regions are now overwhelmed. Daily infections have surged in India following a decline in January and February. That is blamed on huge crowds and people's reluctance to wear masks.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
the supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness. And I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
The month of God. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam and welcome to the program. We are with you with another episode of this special series for Ramadan. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says, if the servants of God were aware of the blessings and realities of Ramadan, they would wish the entire year would be Ramadan. He also says, indeed, the gates of sky are open in the first night of Ramadan and will not be closed till the end of the month. Ramadan is the month of further acquaintance with the Noble Quran to benefit from this heavenly book. Imam Baqir, the fifth infallible successor of Prophet, peace upon him, says, everything has a spring, and the spring of the Quran is the month of Ramadan. The Noble Quran has been called, in the words of the Prophet and the infallible Imams, and also the Quran itself, as light, remedy, truth, guidance, criterion, and so on. In view of this, close acquaintance and companionship with the Quran is in fact companionship with light and truth. This requires knowing it and being in constant contact with it. This will result in calm and serenity. Obviously, this has a meaning beyond merely recitation of the Quran, although recitation has its own impact and is considered as the first step for understanding the Quran. Companionship with the Quran should result in improvement of behavior and acquisition of moral virtues. The blessed month of Ramadan is the best opportunity for this purpose, as it is the month in which this heavenly book has been revealed. In Islam, fasting is divided in four categories: obligatory, recommended, disapproved, and forbidden. The most famous obligatory fasting is the fasting of the month of Ramadan, which every mature Muslim should observe it. Recommended fasting includes many days in year, but the 2 months of Rajab and Shaban are famous in this regard. Disapproved fasting is the fasting of the day of Ashura, or 10th, of the Islamic month of Muharram. And finally, forbidden or haram fasting is the fasting of Eid al-Fitr, feast of fasting after the end of Ramadan, and Eid al-Adha, that is the feast of sacrifice on 10th of the Islamic month of Zulhijjah. In addition to the fasting of the blessed month of Ramadan, there is obligatory fasting in other conditions too. Fasting of atonement and fasting on behalf of one's deceased parents are two kinds of obligatory fasting. Fasting is obligatory for a person who is healthy enough. If he or she is sick or becomes sick as a result of fasting, it is forbidden for him or her. If the doctor says that fasting is harmful for one's health, while he or she knows, through experience, that it is not, he or she should fast. On the contrary, if the doctor tells one that fasting is not harmful for him or her, while he or she knows, through experience, that it is, he or she shouldn't fast. In Ayah 60 of Surah Ghafir of the Noble Quran, God has expressly said that He answers anyone who calls Him. He says, "And your Lord has said, call me, and I will answer you. Indeed, those who are disdainful of my worship will enter hell in utter humility." If the heart becomes familiar with the remembrance of God, God will undoubtedly answer his prayer. But how should we call God? We are servants, and God is the Lord of the entire universe. Anyone who refuses to worship God will enter hell with humility. It is narrated from the infallible Imams that they said, "Worship for the fear of hell is the worship of slaves. Worship for the sake of paradise and rewards of hereafter is the worship of merchants, but worship out of gratitude towards God is the worship of free people." The 7th infallible Imam and successor of the Prophet, Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him, has taught us a supplication which is recited after every daily obligatory prayer in the month of Ramadan. He says, "My God, in this year and every year till the end of my life, and as long as I am in comfort and ease, grant me the pilgrimage to your sacred house, Holy Kaaba, and do not deprive me of reaching and visiting the noble places and pilgrimage to the tomb of your messenger. May your greetings be upon him and his progeny. My God, help me in all my needs in this world and hereafter. My God, I ask you, among the ordained affairs that have been definitely determined in the night of Qadr and will not be returned or changed, to place me among the pilgrims of your sacred house, the pilgrims whose Hajj is accepted, whose effort is praised, whose sins are forgiven, and whose evil deeds are expiated. And grant me long life in the way of your servitude, and provide me with ample sustenance, and pay my trust and debts."
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Israel attacked an Iranian cargo vessel again, this time in the Red Sea as opposed to the one last month in the Mediterranean Sea. According to the New York Times, Israel has already informed the United States that its forces had targeted the Iranian ship Saviz in the Red Sea. In this context, the unnamed American official who spoke to the New York Times said that the Israelis consider this attack as a retaliation for what they call the previous Iranian strikes that had targeted Israeli ships. To add more drama to the matter, the Israelis claimed that there had been a delay in their attack to allow the American aircraft carrier in the region, Dwight D. Eisenhower, to remain at a safe distance from the Iranian ship, which Israel claims is a military one. The damage to the Iranian Saviz vessel came as progress was reported on the first day of talks to revive American participation in the 2015 nuclear agreement between Iran and major world powers. Israel, which regards Iran as its most potent foe, strongly opposes a restoration of the agreement, which was abandoned by the Trump administration 3 years ago. Commenting on the attack, the Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh told reporters that the Saviz ship was struck by the blast at around 6 a.m. local time on Tuesday, April 5th, near the coast of Djibouti, and sustained minor damage. No fatalities were caused by the incident, and technical evaluations on how the incident occurred and its origins are still underway. The Iranian official emphasized that Tehran will take all the necessary measures regarding the case through international bodies. Rejecting media claims, Khatibzadeh said that Saviz is not a military vessel whose specifications and mission have been formally registered with the International Maritime Organization. In a similar incident last month, an Iranian cargo ship was damaged after it was targeted by a terrorist attack en route to Europe in the Mediterranean Sea.
Tehran said back then that such acts of terror are a clear example of naval piracy and run counter to international law and the safety of commercial vessels. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Iranian cargo vessel stationed in the Red Sea was damaged by an Israeli mine attack on Tuesday, April 6th, in an escalation of the shadowy neighbor skirmishing that has characterized Israel's animosity with Iran in recent years. The attack came as Iran and world powers sat down in Vienna for the first talks about the U.S. potentially rejoining Tehran's nuclear deal, showing that challenges ahead do not rest merely in those negotiations. Now, to discuss this issue with us from California is Paul LaRudy, former U.S. advisor in the Arabian Peninsula. Thank you very much for being with us, Paul, at such an early hour of the day. I really appreciate it. It seems that the break that Israel had taken during the Trump administration for halting the nuclear deal came to an end when talks now are underway in Vienna for the JCPOA. But now Israel seems more aggressive, pushing for a confrontation at any expense with Iran by targeting the Iranian cargo vessel. How do you think this will play out if Israel continues with this, least to say, reckless behavior?
Well, Israel wants confrontation. It's always shown it. It's part of its history. And it's doing it again. The result of this will be that Iran will retaliate. And it has shown that it will retaliate, for example, with the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and the attack on the Ain al-Assad American base inside Iraq. And so this is likely to be the what will happen. Of course, Iran will do so proportionally. They have, that's what they did in the case of the assassination, and that's what they will do again. And it's also the way Hezbollah functions. So there will be retaliation.
Well, Israel, which regards Iran as its most maybe potent foe in the region, strongly opposes a restoration of any nuclear agreement with Iran. And the latest that we saw is the attack on Natanz power plant as well. What does that have to do with Israel to begin with? I mean, how would an international agreement threaten Israel in any way?
Well, from Iran's, Israel's point of view, the problem with the agreement is that it lifts the sanctions, and Israel wants the sanctions to continue. It wants to harm Iran as much as possible. Iran is standing in the way of Israeli expansion and weakening Israel's neighbors. Because a powerful nation like Iran can come to the aid of Israel's neighbors. So this is part of the Israeli general strategy of weakening its neighbors, and it wants as much confrontation to exist, whether from Israel directly or from the United States and other countries, to weaken Iran. So that's its objective.
Well, we did hear Tehran, and the last time that there was such an attack on an Iranian vessel, it happened last month in March and on the Mediterranean Sea while the vessel was en route to Europe. But Tehran said at that time that such acts of terror are a clear example of naval piracy and run counter to all international law on the safety of commercial vessels, reiterating that it will retaliate to these acts of aggression. What are the Iranian options here? Will it just become an eye for an eye in the open sea?
Well, I think ultimately there may be some of that, an eye for an eye. And Israel has shown that it cares nothing for international law. It will behave the way it wants to. It needs some action, some retaliation, and some disciplining, as, for example, Hezbollah has shown. I mean, Hezbollah has been attacked. Its members have been killed. and it has retaliated, and proportionally, and the result is that Israel becomes quiet because they know that Hezbollah has the power to do that. Well, it's the same thing with Iran. Israel has to learn that Iran's not going to take it, and that the only discipline that they're going to get is an Iranian retaliation. So there may be a tit for tat, an eye for an eye, for some time, but I think ultimately Israel will see that this is useless and that it harms Israel more than it harms Iran.
Well, it seems that several regional files are being put on hold waiting for the breakthrough talks of the JCPOA and the return of possible diplomatic relations between Iran and the U.S., basically from Yemen to Lebanon to Syria and Iraq, and now the Israeli-Iranian feud. Are we exaggerating if we say the entire West of Asia is right now at a crossroad?
If it's not right now at a crossroads, it soon will be with things going the way they are. In fact, the sanctioned nations are becoming a kind of common market of sanctioned nations. They are helping each other. They are finding allies. Iran just signed a 25-year big economic agreement, $400 billion with China, and it's and Russia also is participating in this kind of sanctions common market. Even the European nations have kind of found another way to get past the sanctions for certain purposes. So things are changing. The power of the United States is extending its power beyond its means, and the result will be that the other nations will get together and find ways around it and to develop their own power base. They need to do that because the main threat is the United States.
Well, wouldn't that bear the question of when that happens, wouldn't the United States go all out for a war to try and retake the position that it had lost?
It's always possible, but I don't think the United we can hope that the United States population will resist that, because the U.S. population is being impoverished and is without resources. More people are on the street. The homeless population is growing by leaps and bounds. And to have this greater burden than they have now, when half of their entire national budget is going for defense, more than half, in fact, I think the United States is reaching the limits of its capabilities, and we're watching a superpower decline.
Mm-hmm. Well, it definitely is something to look out for in West Asia, especially when Israel has been very blatant about its attack on whether the Islamic Republic of Iran or other allies of the Islamic Republic of Iran in the region, namely in Syria, Iraq, and in South Lebanon. I want to thank you very much from California, Mr. Paul LaRudy, former U.S. advisor in the Arabian Peninsula, for joining us to talk about this shadowy naval war that's going on in our region. Now, please stay tuned, because next we will be talking how Hezbollah is implementing the economic resistance in Lebanon.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
For For over a year, there has been a severe economic and political crisis in Lebanon, whose end is not in sight. In view of this, the Lebanese resistance Hezbollah has made a series of moves aimed at helping any needy Lebanese population cope with the negative implications of the economic crisis. With shortages of goods and skyrocketing prices, Hezbollah has opened a chain of supermarkets selling inexpensive goods at subsidized prices that are about 30 to 50% lower than the market price. Hezbollah's response to the economic crisis in Lebanon in this following report.
Since October 2019, there has been a severe financial, economic, and political crisis in Lebanon, whose end is not in sight. Underlying the crisis are fundamental problems, mainly firmly rooted corruption and a chronic state of political instability. Additional difficulties have been added to the fundamental problems. The COVID-19 crisis, the negative effects of U.S. sanctions on the Lebanese economy and banking system, the explosion of the port of Beirut, difficulties stemming from the global war on Syria, and the lack of external assistance due to Lebanon's failure to carry out the reforms required by the international community. These effects were reflected in a shortage of basic essential products like food, fuel, and medication, difficulties in the banking system, and even initial signs of weakened security. In view of this, Hezbollah has made a series of moves aimed at helping the Lebanese population cope with the negative implications of the economic crisis. As the Lebanese market suffers from shortages of goods and skyrocketing prices, Hezbollah has opened a chain of supermarkets called Al-Nur Depot in southern Lebanon, South Beirut, and the Baqaa Valley. These supermarkets sell inexpensive goods at subsidized prices that are about 30 to 50% lower than the market prices. Payment is made through a special shopper's card called the Al-Sajjad card, named after the fourth Shia imam, who attached great importance to mutual solidarity in society. A drug shortage in Lebanon also prompted Hezbollah to begin purchasing Syrian and Iranian inexpensive drugs and medical products. The medical products were distributed to Hezbollah's affiliated pharmacies to cover the shortage. A fuel shortage that has led to rising prices of fuel products and frequent power outages also prompted Hezbollah to purchase fuel products and supply fuel to gas stations in the resistance areas where the U.S. undeclared sanctions are leading to critical fuel shortages in gas stations. To help the Lebanese people overcome the severe economic crisis accompanied by currency collapse and insane increase in prices, Hezbollah has become the last resort for the Lebanese public to survive the worst economic crisis in the country's modern history.
To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Dr. Ibrahim Moussaoui, Lebanese Member of Parliament for the Loyalty to the Resistance Bloc, Hezbollah. Thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Moussaoui. Now, following the difficulties caused by the economic crisis in Lebanon, Hezbollah's response was direct aid of its community by opening a chain of supermarkets in South Lebanon, in South Beirut, and in the Baqaa Valley. These supermarkets are selling inexpensive goods at subsidized prices, despite the fact that they are not subsidized goods, but with prices lower than 50% of the market price. Why on earth would that call for any scrutiny or even frustration from anyone?
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to discuss this. First of all, you're talking about a highly divided Lebanese society. You're talking about a kind of polarization between East and West, if you want to say, between people who follow the Western hegemonic powers, namely the USA and other powers who support the tightening of the Western grip over the country and over the region and over the area, as we all know, and between others who are the supporters of their own country, their domestic genuine interest of the people and the land, the liberators of the land, those who are deeply entrenched in their lands. This kind of division is going to be translated into positions of frustration from one area and from one crowd, from one audience. And on the other hand, it's a sigh of relief, it's a hilarious and happiness for the faithfulness, for the loyalty, for the attention, for the care from Hezbollah, from the resistance to the Lebanese people. I say the Lebanese people, yes, because the Shia areas that you mentioned, they represent the part of the Lebanese society. If we have the capability, we are starting to support in the most striking areas, in the areas that are under the highest tightened pressure from the United States of America. And we all know that, and all the Lebanese know that. If our capabilities are enough, we are going to extend this to whoever would accept it or would want it, because, as I told you, this has been a source of criticism from other sides. We don't care about it. We are talking about people who have served their lives, who have sacrificed their blood, who have given everything to this true path of resistance and nationalism.
Well, Dr. Moussaoui, the thing that actually brought about a certain kind of frustration, which I found odd, but we need to explain to the audience, which is the payments for these goods in the Hezbollah supermarkets, they are being made through a special shopper's card called a Sajjad card. It's the name of the fourth Shia Imam, Zayn al-Abidin, the son of Imam Hussein, alayhi salam, who attached great importance to mutual solidarity in society. That was his legacy. Does that suggest purpose that this card is strictly for the Shia of Lebanon?
Absolutely not. I did tell you this because when we talk about the universality of the message of Islam, it's for everybody, anywhere, anyone who is in need. When we talk about Imam Sajjad, Imam Zain al-Abidin, salamullah alayhi, we're talking about a source of mercy, a source of kindness and grace for all. And here we are talking especially on the eve of Shahr Ramadan. May all of the prayers of Allah be upon all the believers and all the people. This is the month of mercy. We wanted to emulate this great Imam who used to have the goods of the people, of the poor, of the orphans, of the needy. He used to go from one place to another carrying this over his back and not showing himself during the nights and during the days. He was like going there and they didn't know about him. It was until he died that the people knew that he was the one who was sending the message. Of course, at the time, the society was not that complicated. The houses were very few. If we talk about 100 years ago or 200 years ago in the villages, everybody would know everybody. What about if you're talking about 1,300 or 1,200 years ago? So this is the message that we wanted to send. It's not limited. It's not restricted to these areas, but it is the beginning, and hopefully we would be able to extend this to all, to everyone who is in need.
Well, a fuel shortage that has led to rising prices of the fuel products and frequent power outages due to the bankruptcy of the Lebanese Central Bank, which is a result of decades of corruption in Lebanon, Hezbollah has begun, the party has begun purchasing fuel products, especially diesel fuel, and supplying fuel gas to fuel oil to gas stations that are not receiving any fuel from the government, especially in stations that happen to be in areas that support Hezbollah, which is basically undeclared U.S. sanctions against an entire population. This is basically collective punishment. But if the central bank is bankrupt, how come only the Shia communities are suffering from this fuel shortage?
Well, actually, it's not only the fuel shortages in the Shia area. To tell you the truth, there are restrictions on the borders here and there. And there is another point that I want. Unfortunately, when we talk about the merchants, the big merchants, those who have the ability to make any kind of restriction over the fuel oil, over these goods, they want to keep them. So when the prices go up, they would make use of it. This is a big problem, actually. But to tell you the truth, Hezbollah, not Hezbollah, the Iranian side, the Iranian ambassador to Lebanon has made it very clear to the Lebanese government, everyone, that Iran is ready to hand out the help for the Lebanese community and for the Lebanese government, for the Lebanese state, to take the fuel from Iran, and they would use the Lebanese lira, the Lebanese pound. This is unprecedented, and this would help in easing, and if you want, and solving the problem of the fuel, and this would like save a very important and dear
refused.
Money for the government. The government refused. They don't want to take this position. The same offer has been given about the electricity, that Iran is ready to build fields and plans of electricity, so it could be locally and domestically here in Lebanon generated. not to take from any side. Mm-hmm. Again, it was refused. So it is the general help for all of the Lebanese people. Some accepted, others refused. This is the problem. Again, those who refused, some of them because they hate the axis of resistance, because they follow another completely different axis. Mm-hmm. And the another area, other people, they are afraid of more restrictions and more sanctions from the American side. We, in this axis of resistance, we are going to do everything possible to help the Lebanese generally and our people particularly to ease the situation over them, whether it is for fuel or whatever.
Unfortunately, please. That's all the time that we have. We have one more minute, Dr. Moussaoui, but I want to talk about expanding the services of Al Qard Al Hassan Association just after the collapse in Lebanon. I know that these plans are Hezbollah's ways of dealing with the economic downfall, but now they have their own chain of banks as well, and also ATM machines. But doesn't that just fall in the validation of the notion of a state within a state?
Absolutely not. I categorically deny and refuse this. To tell you the truth, the government is there and we want them. This is something. When you talk, you're not talking about chain of banks or branches of banks. You're talking about ATMs. It is only restricted to this charity groups called Qard Al Hassan. It has been there. Qard Al Hassan has been there as an institution since more than 30 years. But yes, truly, it has been expanded after the sanctions that has taken place, because people want to put their money in a safe place that they can take it anytime they want, and they are not taking any kind of interests for having it there. This is something that has been, you know, when you put people at risk and they make it an opportunity. This is the menace that has been changed into an opportunity by Hezbollah, by the axis of the resistance, by the people who trust the resistance. Mm-hmm. This has pushed many people, because they talked about Qard Al Hassan, many people felt that it is their duty to go and put their money there, because it is safer than the
So it's basically a matter of trust between the Lebanese people and the resistance. I want to thank
you very much. If you ask all of the experts, they tell you the number one issue in Lebanon is the trust.
Exactly. I want to thank you very much, Dr. Ibrahim Moussaoui, Lebanese Member of Parliament for the loyalty to the resistance bloc, Hezbollah, for being with us to talk about this very important issue, how Hezbollah is leading an economy of resistance in Lebanon. And thank you. Please stay tuned next week for more from the Middle East stream.
The Limelight.
Kim Potter, the white Minnesota police officer who fatally shot the black resident Daunte Wright during a traffic stop, and her chief of police, Tim Gannon, resigned on Tuesday, 13th of April. Their resignations come after two nights of protests in the Minneapolis suburb of Brooklyn Center over last Sunday's killing of Wright, who was unarmed when he was pulled over for a traffic violation on Sunday. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnists Richard Luscombe and Joanna Walters. The piece is titled, "Minnesota Officer Who Killed Daunte Wright Resigns Along with Police Chief." Stay with us for more of Richard Luscombe and Joanna Walters' article. Kim Potter, the white Minnesota police officer who fatally shot the black resident Daunte Wright during a traffic stop, and her chief of police, Tim Gannon, resigned on Tuesday, 13th of April 2021. Their resignations came after two nights of protests in the Minneapolis suburb of Brooklyn Center over last Sunday's killing of Wright, who was unarmed when he was pulled over for a traffic violation on Sunday. In a press conference on Monday, 12th of April, Tim Gannon had told reporters that Kim Potter, a veteran police officer with 26 years' service, mistakenly deployed her service-issue handgun instead of her taser as she attempted to stop Daunte Wright driving away. I believe it is in the best interest of the community, the department, and my fellow officers if I resigned immediately, Kim Potter wrote in a letter to the Brooklyn Center Mayor Mike Elliott and acting city manager Reggie Edwards. Potter also said she had loved every minute of being a police officer and serving this community to the best of my ability. Brooklyn Center Mayor Mike Elliott fired Edwards' predecessor, Kurt Bougainey, on Monday, 12th of April, after he countered Elliott's earlier call for Kim Potter to be fired. Shortly after receiving Potter's letter, Mike Elliott hosted a hastily arranged press conference at the Brooklyn Center City Hall and said he was appreciative that she had resigned, hoping it would bring some calm to the community. But the mayor, Mike Elliott, said, "We have to make sure that justice is served, justice is done. Daunte Wright deserves that, his family deserves that. Full accountability under the law. That's what we're going to continue to work for."